Are you running like running around like a crazy man?
I swear to God, I can't even. Well, the short answer is yes.
Oh boy.
Yes, I am, and I've got. Hold on a sec. I got 15 minutes. I got a reporter here from Oklahoma, something or other, waiting for me in the lobby right now, and I got to meet him at 8. So. If we can't get it all done, you know, I'll square up with you this weekend, but...
Not a problem, buddy.
Let's do something.
Not a problem. I wrote down some stuff, more or less barbershop-related questions, and do you want me to just throw them out there and you can spill away? I mean, I know the answer to some of them, but I just wanted to get your words.
Sure.
So if you want, you just you call it whenever you want, And
yeah.
We can stop and we can settle it later. But I wrote down people reading the Harmonizer are going to want to know, like, when did you first get bitten by the bug?
Well, I mean, the true story is in the 10th grade at Overly Senior High, I was in a music class that happened to be taught by Fred King. And Fred was... You know, not just an amazing barbershop. Everybody knows that, obviously. But as a school teacher, he was, you know, he was a remarkable guy. He was the first guy, he was the first adult to ever treat me like an adult before I was an adult. And, you know, we just formed a bond. He was, you know, a mentor to me in high school. And consequently, I didn't feel bad about stealing the Oriole 4 album that he had left on his piano one afternoon. He had played a couple of songs from it for the boys' chorus, which I was in, and I liked it. So I sort of liberated it for a couple of days and took it home and listened to it and listened to old folks over and over again and came in and said, you know, I brought the album back, of course, and just said, this is very cool. I don't understand what it is, but I dig it. And you know, let's, you know, can you help me? So I think I can hit these low notes. And so, you know, he let me, you know, sing along with all the different parts, which I had figured out. And then a production of The Music Man was had just been cast, actually, and I didn't realize there was a barbershop quartet in it. But, you know, I learned all the music from that, and he hooked me up with, you know, Chuck and Mike Price, Bobby Kaufman, all of whom were, you know, I'm still friends with. And that was my first quartet in high school called The Clipper Four.
The Clipper Four. I did not know that.
Because I stole an album.
That's great.
So the moral is, if you're serious about barbershop, when you're young, by all means, steal something.
Steal albums. That's great. Or just steal albums from Fred King, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Mike, what hooked you about it? Was it the sound? Was it the songs they were doing, or... tell me about that.
Well, it was for me, it was just the weirdness of the music. I'd never heard that kind of close harmony before. But there was also something that, at the time, I really couldn't have articulated it too well, but having thought about it over the years, it was something like, the Germans have a word called Verschmalz. You know, it's a nostalgia for a time that you didn't actually live in. It's sort of a strange thing, but when I heard the music, I was like, you know, that just reminds me of, you know, post-World War II music. It reminded me of standards, and I was always a fan of that part of that time in history, even though I had no direct connection to it. So there was just something about it that that resonated immediately. You know, it was very earnest, which I'm normally suspicious of, but, you know, it was just so out there. And so, you know, I'd never heard four full-grown men singing shamelessly about friendship and lost love and pals and their mothers and old folks. You know, it just seemed... insanely sincere compared to all of the other music that was popular on the radio in 1979 or 1980, whatever it was, 1977, in fact. So
Right. Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. Well,
you know, I heard the overtones immediately. I heard overtones, undertones, middle tones, and I kept staring at the album because I just couldn't. I was looking at the four guys who claimed to be making the noise, but I just couldn't believe it was only, you know, four of them. It sounded like a whole chorus.
And this was the Oriole 4 album you were listening to?
This was the Oriole 4, and I'll tell you what was also funny about it. Fred, you know, got me hooked up with some other guys and taught us some songs, but he never really talked about the Society, and he never really talked about the Chorus of the Chesapeake.
Uh-huh.
He just really talked about friendship and music and, you know, stories about Jimmy Grant and Don and Gene and, you know, the fact that he was in high school when he started
that
thing. And it's just, you know, it was a very sort of intimate thing. But the curious thing about it was, for me, you know, I didn't know about Spep Squad. I didn't know about the Chorus of the Chesapeake. I didn't know about any of it. So I actually thought for about 3 or 4 weeks that the Oriole 4 was really the only organized barbershop quartet in the history of all time.
The worst.
And that album was really the only thing that had ever been recorded in this style.
That's amazing. Oh, my God.
Now, remember, I'm only 17, 16 years old.
Right.
And, you know, it's 1977, and what the hell do I know? I know nothing. And then, like, 2 or 3 weeks later, on a Tuesday night, after school, you know, he throws me and Chuck in his Lincoln, and we go out, and we have a beer and a sandwich, and he takes us over the Chorus of the Chesapeake. And I walked into there, and, you know, I don't have to tell you what that's like. It was, at the time, you know, with all the cats, you know, all the old guys, the young guys, the 120 guys preparing for a district contest that was coming up in a couple of weeks. And they filled the risers, and Fred took me right out there next to him.
Yep,
he stood me right next to him while he directed. That's what I call a pal.
Oh, my gosh.
And I did my pants.
I bet you did. Oh, my gosh.
I wept. Just because it was so big and so crazy and the sound was everywhere, and I didn't, you know, I was still getting my head around the fact that the Society was bigger than the Oriole 4.
Right, gotcha.
You know,
right.
And now I'm looking at 130 guys just killing me. and then he calls out of the chorus Don, Gene, and Jim. And they walk right up to Fred, and they turn around, and now Chuck walks over and joins me. And while the chorus is still in the risers, the Oriole 4 surrounds us.
Oh, my.
And sings Susie. And, you know, and I say, again, you know, if I had room in my underpants to bleep some more, I would bleep again. But I didn't. I just stood there speechless.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was my first real evening of in-your-face, no kidding around, you know, an international championship quartet. Still, you know, remember 1977.
That's great.
You guys could still hit it. That's, I mean, hell, they had just won, 8 years earlier?
Right.
6 years earlier.
Right. And that's quite
and,
a first evening.
You know, an international championship chorus.
Mm. Mm-mm-mm.
So that's when it really murdered me. that week, you know, he gave me the Nightingale, or the Nighthawks, he gave me the Bills,
gosh.
He gave me the Confederates, he gave me, you know, all the old Chorus albums, and I just sat home and listened to them, and slowly got my head around the fact that there were 35,000 other guys out there who were doing this all around the country. It just seemed impossible.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So
that's quite a first evening of barbershop.
It's just a long way of saying, you know, when I was in high school, that was my baptism. Not just in the barbershop. Truthfully, that's just a very small part of it. That was my first look into grown men doing an artistic thing together.
Right.
Drinking together, clowning around together, working together, winning together, losing together, singing together, laughing together, all of it. now.
Good grief.
And through it all was this notion. You remember Whitey?
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Whitey being brought up in front of the chorus to tell me a story, basically, of, you know, what he did in the war.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I'm sitting there, you know, with World War II vets, active combat vets, and, you know, they're dying off every month.
Yes.
But I'm sitting there singing Roses of Picardy.
Mm. Oh, my gosh.
You know, singing Buddy, Can You Spare a Dime?
Mike, that gives me chills.
Dude, it was nothing short for the time. You know, I mean, you really have to remember everybody had an intro to this stuff, but you've got to, you know, I mean, I was just getting started in high school. I was shy. I had a light stutter.
Really?
You know,
I did not know that.
I'd never sung before, and I was just starting to act because it helped me with my stutter, and so did singing.
Unbelievable. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Huh. So you had so from early on when you were in high school, you had was your relationship with Fred really close right from the beginning? I mean, as soon as you seemed to exhibit an interest or a slight interest, or when you returned the stolen merchandise, did you guys have a pretty good bond?
To tell you the truth, it was even, I knew that the guy was going to be, I mean, I knew he was different when he used some incredibly bad language to shut a kid up. And I just had never seen or imagined a teacher would talk like that.
Of course.
You know? But Fred, you know, Fred didn't beep around. And, you know, he was an amazing teacher. Just amazing. And I wanted him to like me. And I wanted to be his friend. And I had no idea how to, but I just, you know, signed up for all his classes and always hung around the music room.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, Rick, there's a lot I haven't told you about. You know, my relationship with Fred in high school was, I mean, a year later, he tossed me the keys to his Lincoln. He got in the backseat, fell asleep, and gave me the map and asked me to drive him down to Lynchburg, Virginia.
Unbelievable.
You know,
that's
years old.
Great.
We get halfway down there, he wakes up, we pull over, we have a few beers, there's craziness on the, I mean, he took me on a road trip, and then he introduced me to this other whole part of the crazy scene I didn't know existed, which were the Sweet Adelines.
Right, of course.
Now I'm 17 years old, standing in front of some chorus of women.
All women.
You know, some older, some younger. And they're all looking at him like he's the last piece of chicken at a country fried cookout. And the young ones are looking at me like I'm his genius protege. So, basically, you know, he gives me beep in Virginia at 17. He gives me a beer. He gives me beep. And he introduces me to some of the coolest, weirdest, most unbelievable music.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a hell of a thing.
I'm almost jealous, but I've had here of late, the last 4 or 5 years, I've had some great experiences with him, when it's been just he and I, and he is a pretty amazing person. It's amazing how many lives he's touched. I mean, he's touched my life. He's touched your life. I mean, when I was about your age, I met him. And the Oriole 4 came to my chapter show and sang on the show. And my mother had been very sick, and she couldn't make it to the show. And so Freddie goes, well, where do you live? We'll go by the house and sing her a couple. And so the Orioles came to my house and sang, you know, their contest set, Why Do They Always Say No, and Danny Boy to my mom.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm 16 years old. I mean, it was just like I thought it was like the end, you know? I mean,
yeah.
just great.
Yeah.
But enough about me. Let's talk about you. Mikey, I forgot to tell you, I'm going to record this and I'll filter out all this. But feel free to talk. I'm just using this so I don't have to take notes.
No, it's fine. And you know what? When you're done, write what you want to write. Capture the spirit of it. You know, move whatever words around you need to. Send me a copy just so I know you're not, you know, killing me.
No, I wouldn't do that.
That's fine. I trust you. Write what you need to.
That's great. Could I ask you, are you currently a member of the society?
I'm not.
Okay.
No. But it's funny. I can't think of a week that's gone by when I haven't listened to Barbershop Harmony.
Oh gosh, I'm glad to hear you say that. That's great. So I need to I need to speak to some people about getting you an honorary life membership. I mean, they gave Dick Van Dyke a life membership, and he had his TV show, and you've got a TV show. And in my eyes,
I'd be honored. But it's, you know, to me, I fell in love with Barbershop long before I knew it existed as an organization.
Right.
And, you know, my ties to it and my feelings for it actually I want to say this the right way, but it was never about the society. It was always about four guys.
Yeah.
Always.
When
I realized that those four guys could be interchangeable, that was very cool. You know, really cool.
Right.
All the rest of it is really interesting, and I wouldn't trade a day of it. But the thing I carry with me, you know, 20 years later, is not the competitions. You know, it's always the afterglows. It's always four guys in a stairwell.
Right.
Always.
That is so cool to hear, and a hold of my wife is prompting me now. Yeah, I've got that shirt. I've got that.
You know what I have in my CD player in my car at home?
Oh,
I've never in
that's a great question, Mike. What do you have in your CD player?
Suntones first album.
The first album?
It's the Suntones. I got and I've got the Oriole 4, but I still switch out once in a while.
How fun.
But yeah, it's the old, I mean, it's funny, as many times as you and I have been around singing, you know, current arrangements and all this stuff, which of course is great and
yep,
all that, the stuff that takes me back the fastest is A Little Street World Friends Meet.
Yeah, man.
You know, it is Danny Boy, it's anything on the Oriole 4.
That's cool.
But it's that, you know, for me, it's the cool thing about the music is really all music, any music. I think, you know, the reason, you know, it's endured for centuries is not because of how it sounds, but because of where it takes you.
Yep.
You know, mentally, and that's, for me, you know, the hearing that old-timey Barbershop sound takes me. I'm 17 years old, and I'm in Fred King's music room, and I'm speaking out with the Oriole 4 album.
That's great. So it still works on you. I mean, all these years later, even though you're not able to do it every week or regularly, it still has an effect in your life.
Absolutely. And, you know, here's another thing. You know, I don't know how to say it without it sounding like some sort of backhanded observation, but, you know, while I value and I'm grateful that the society exists, in a lot of ways, for me, you know, the best memories of Barbershop are not because of the organization.
Yep.
You know, it's in some cases, it's even been in spite of it, you know?
I got you.
And I say this with nothing but affection, but you know, the harder you try and organize a feeling, you know, the more frustrating it's going to eventually become. It's just like a city or any other organization. You're going to have factions and fractions, and you're going to have, you know, different tastes and whatever. That's all cool. But, yeah, to answer your question, the stuff I still carry with me is the, you know, the first time I heard Fred King pull out a pitch pipe and blow it, you know what? It might as well have been Captain Kirk pulling out a phaser.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, what in the is that?
Yep.
What, I mean, yeah. And why is it in your pocket?
Yeah, why do you have it? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, it was just crazy. It might as well really have been a gun or, you know, something, a piece of kryptonite. He could have just easily pulled his face off, and I would react. I was like, it's just inconceivable. Full-grown man carrying around this little round thing.
Around harmonica.
Tones.
That is incredible. Oh, my gosh.
I went right out and got one.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if you remember, how much was your pitch pipe when you bought it?
Well, the truth is, he gave it to me.
Oh, is that right? Oh,
Fred King gave me that pitch pipe.
That's great.
And then the first time I ever bought one, It came in that little square case.
Yeah, the little red case, yep.
Yeah, the Spence Squad thing on the cover.
Yep.
I bought it for like, I think it was like, I don't know, $4.99 at a convention.
I'm not even going to tell you how much they're going for now.
Oh, how much?
It's like $30 or something.
Get out of here.
It is. It's like $30 or something. It's like really expensive.
Well, imagine how silly I felt years later, realizing here I am with perfect pitch, walking around with this stupid thing in my pocket.
Do you have perfect pitch?
Not even close. I've been lying to you for the last 20 minutes. I've never met Fred King.
You're the man.
And this is a micro.
Well, I'm cutting that part out.
Thank you.
Were you, Mike, a member of any other chapters other than Dundalk?
Nope.
Okay. That's a good one-word answer. I like that. I'm going to put nope, too. That's great. Fred had organized these other guys, Mike Price and Gene and the other fellows, into the quartet. And tell me the name of the quartet again.
We called ourselves the Clipper Four.
The Clipper Four.
And then, you know, a few weeks later, I was devastated to learn that there was a quartet called the Clipper Four in the course of the Chesapeake with, do you remember them? Short guy. It must be pushing 70 now. Silver hair.
Well, you just described 85 of the guys in the Dundalk chapter.
I just described Dundalk, yeah. But anyway, yeah. So after I learned that the Clipper Four was taken, I insisted that we have to change our name.
Was that
formal?
Was that Chips McHenry?
Was it Chips McHenry?
Now he might have been in the Baltimore.
No, his name was Tim. This guy's name was Tim.
Oh, Tim. Timmy Long?
Timmy Long.
Unbelievable.
5'7", maybe?
Yep.
Short guy.
Timmy
over
still,
here, Tim Long.
Timmy yeah. still stands in the front row of the chorus.
You're kidding.
I swear to God, he was there last Tuesday night. That is unbelievable. So wait till I ask him about the Clipper Four, man. I'm going to put it on his... That's great.
Like, yeah. Went back and I said, guys, I'm really sorry, but, you know, a bunch of old stole our name.
And that's when you became semi-formal.
Semi-formal, that's right.
Cool.
We wore tuxedos and tennis shoes because we were terribly clever.
And you guys sang on the Dundalk Sweet Adeline show, right?
The first time we ever sang in public was on the stage. Sorry. First time we sang in public was in a nursing home, and a guy basically exploded in front of me. He'd been in a coma he was sound asleep in a wheelchair. And we sang every song we know, and halfway through Nearby God to Thee, which was a horrible choice in hindsight, he sneezed so violently, something about the size of a lung flew out of his mouth and landed on Chuck's shoe.
Oh, no.
And then they wheeled him away. I think he died in the middle of Nearby God to Thee.
Oh,
but the second time we sang together was on the stage in the Lyric.
And that was on the Dundalk Sweet Ad show.
No, that was the actual course of the Chesapeake show.
Oh, of course, Chesapeake show. Okay.
Yes, but we did certainly sing in the Sweet Ad show.
Cool.
At least once.
That's great.
You know, that was, geez.
That is
a long
great.
Time ago, but yeah.
Well, and you've always sung bass, is that right?
Yes. Always sang bass.
And, Mike, a lot of guys are always saying, you know, well, gee, I wish I could sing tenor. Do you ever wish you could sing another part? I mean, I know you've got a huge range. I mean, I've sung with you many times. But, I mean, do you ever wish that you'd, you know, been born a baritone? Or, I mean, God forbid, but, I mean, a tenor or a lead? I mean, you ever wish for another part?
You know, I mean, the only other part that I actually envy is a really great lead, because in the end, even though it's a society about harmony, you know, you can't harmonize with anything that's not melodic, and it's, you know, a really great singer, a really great lead, obviously, is where you hang your hat.
That's where it is.
But, you know, baritones, usually, you know, get a little twitchy and restless later in life. Tenors, of course, go mad.
It's the oxygen starvation, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, the headaches start to come around 50, and, you know, you never really shake them.
That's right.
Bassists, actually, you know, their voices just get lower, you know, and just get a little bit more mellow, buy another pickup truck.
Exactly.
You know,
That's great. Mike, if you don't mind, let me just ask you a couple more quick things here, and this might be just great what you've given me here. You said it earlier, I think, but the question I had written down was, do you ever miss singing barbershop on a regular basis, or has your singing been replaced by, you know, other things in your life, your career, relationships? Do you have a girlfriend? I think you told me that you did, or you had a special lady.
Yeah, I've been with the same girl for 12, 13 years.
You had a special lady, but I mean, you know, do you miss singing it? I mean, if things were different, if Mike was a regular guy, worked a 9-to-5 job, do you think you'd be a barbershopper still again?
I think that if I had a routine, I would try and make room for that. But I don't know, Rick, honestly, if I'd be a barbershopper I'm bad with routine by and large, but what I would try and do is get together at least once a month with three other guys and learn some songs to harmonize. I don't know that I would ever want to compete again. I don't really aspire to, too much structure that way.
Right.
But, you know, if the opportunities were there and, you know, I could pick up the phone and have, you know, three other guys come over to the, you know,
right,
little dirt bag of a hotel I'm in right now.
And sing a couple.
Are you kidding? There's a beautiful sunset here in Oklahoma City, which is ironic, isn't it? Isn't that
it
where
is.
The cash?
It is. It is.
Well, I'm in Oklahoma City right now.
Unbelievable.
If I could find, just like Cash did, you know, 70 years ago, three like-minded souls, I'd look for a corner that was appropriately uninhabited, a frosty beverage, and I would probably suggest down our way to get things going.
Just to knock the dust off. There you go.
Yeah.
So if I'm reading you right, and I think you and I have known each other a long time. I mean, the way barbershopping was presented to you way back when you first got started was more about the relationships with guys and your camaraderie and fellowship and that sort of thing, and the singing was part of that. It wasn't about seeing if you could qualify to be in a chorus or that sort of thing. I mean, it was more. Freddie was stressing more about relationships and that type thing. Am I right? Rather than you got to be a guy in the chapter, you got to be an officer, you got to do this, you got to serve as that, you gotta.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the best thing and the thing that I remember Fred saying most often about the chorus wasn't the fact that they had won a couple of championships. He would often say things like, the men in this room could build and run a city. It's important that you know that, Mike. You know, this isn't a room full of people who sing. This is a room full of real men who are very capable and balanced in their life. We're brought together by this common thing. But, you know, these are people who build the infrastructure. These are men that get things done. And it was really important, you know, and I have to say too that, you know, I didn't see this in any other chapter, not to the extent that it existed in Dundalk. But Dundalk was a macho chapter.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? This is, you know, and Baltimore is a tough town. So these are steel workers, foundry guys, factory guys.
Right.
There was a real blue-collar sentiment. And one of the things I most liked about my introduction to barbershop was the fact that, you know, men were really behaving, you know, in manly ways.
Yep.
Don't read too much into that, but...
No,
I
got you.
You know what I mean, right?
Of course, absolutely.
It was just a straight-up, no kidding, look, this is how we get it done. You know, by day... We're pouring molten steel.
Yep.
And by night, we're singing about Susie.
Yep.
And it's perfectly fine. You know, they made it fine.
Yep.
To, you know, shamelessly express yourself in song. You know, and I had never I'd never seen that before.
You know, I would like to join the society that you're describing. That's
yeah, I bet you would.
That sounds pretty. That sounds pretty good.
Oh man, Rick. It was awesome. I can put myself back there quickly,
yeah,
just thinking about it.
That is so great.
You know, for a young boy trying to figure out, you know, how to be a grown up,
yep,
there just couldn't have been a better example.
Oh my gosh, that is so fortunate that you got into that class that one,
yeah,
time. That is, that's,
I did. I got a front row seat right at the end of it, brought in by, you know, the man.
Incredible.
Hey Ricky, I gotta deal with this guy in the lobby.
Go, man.
Can we finish up this weekend? Maybe Sunday.
Sunday I can talk to you with no problem. I'm gonna be on a bus.
Call me when you get home if you need more. You know, I want to make sure you have everything you need, but I'm jammed.
I'll be honest with you. I only had a couple more, so I mean, I don't know what you got planned for later tonight. If you want to call me back, I'll be up really late.
If you're up late, I may call you in a couple hours.
Call me in a couple hours. I'll be here.
Okay, brother.
Thank you, Mike.
You got it, buddy.
Talk to you soon, brother. Bye.